Chapter 5. Von Speck, Dorothea's father, had early shown himself a passionate admirer of art, had quitted home to study architecture in Italy, and had become celebrated throughout Europe, and been appointed a Borough Architect and Constantbahn Spector of the United Principalities. They are but 4 miles wide, and his genius has consequently but little room to play. What art can do, however, he does. The palace is frequently whitewashed under his eyes, the theater painted occasionally, the noble public buildings erected, of which I have already made mention. I had come to Kalbsbrücken, scarce knowing whither I went, and having, in about 10 minutes, seen the curiosities of the place, I did not care to see the king's palace, for chairs and tables have no great charm for me. I had ordered horses, and wanted to get on I cared not whither, when fate threw Dorothea in my way. I was yawning back to the hotel through the palace garden, a valet to place at my side, when I saw a young lady seated under a tree reading a novel, her mama on the same bench, a fat woman in light blue, knitting a stocking, and two officers, choked in their stays, with various orders on their spinach-colored coats, standing by in first attitudes. The one was caressing the fat lady in blue's little dog. The other was twirling his own mustache, which was already as nearly as possible curled into his own eye. I don't know how it is, but I hate to see men evidently intimate with nice-looking women, and on good terms with themselves. There's something annoying in their cursed complacency, their evident sunshiny happiness. I've no woman to make sunshine for me, and yet my heart tells me that not one, but several such suns, would do good to my system. Who are those pert-looking officers, says I, peevishly, to the guide, who are talking to those vulgar-looking women? The big one, with the epaulets, is Major von Schnabel, the little one, with the pale face, is Stiefel von Klingenspor. And the big blue woman? The Grand Ducal Pumpernickelian court architectress, and upper palace and building inspectress von Speck, born 5. Ayer, replied the guide. Our well-born honor has seen the pump in the marketplace, that is the work of the great von Speck. And yonder young person? Mr. Court Architect's daughter, the Fräulein Dorothea. Dorothea looked up from her novel here, and turned her face towards the stranger who was passing, and then blushing turned it down again. Schnabel looked at me with a scowl, Klingenspor with a simper, the dog with a yelp, the fat lady in blue just gave one glance, and seemed, I thought, rather well pleased. Islands, listen, said she to the dog. Oh, on, darling Dorothea, she added, to her daughter, who continued her novel. Her voice was a little tremulous, but very low and rich. For some reason or other, on getting back to the inn, I countermanded the horses, and said I would stay for the night. I not only stayed that night, but many, many afterwards. And as for the manner in which I became acquainted with the Speck family, why, it was a good joke against me at the time, and I did not like then to have it known. But now it may as well come out at once. Speck, as everybody knows, lives in the marketplace, opposite his grand work of art, the town pump, or fountain. I bought a large sheet of paper, and having a knack at drawing, sat down, with the greatest gravity, before the pump, and sketched it for several hours. I knew it would bring out old Speck to see. At first he contented himself by flattening his nose against the window glasses of his study, and looking what the Englander was about. Then he put on his gray cap with the huge green shade, and sauntered to the door. Then he walked round me, and formed one of a band of street idlers who were looking on. Then at last he could restrain himself no more, but, pulling off his cap, with a low bow, began to discourse upon arts, and architecture in particular. It is curious, says he, that you have taken the same view, of which a print has been engraved. That is extraordinary, says I, though it wasn't, for I had traced my drawing at a window off the very print in question. I added that I was, like all the world, immensely struck with the beauty of the edifice, heard of it at Rome, where it was considered to be superior to any of the celebrated fountains of that capital of the fine arts. Finally, that unless perhaps the celebrated fountain of Aldgate in London might compare with it, Calbsbrittan building, except in that case, was incomparable. This speech I addressed in French, of which the worthy Hofarchitekt understood somewhat, and continuing to reply in German, our conversation grew pretty close. It is singular that I can talk to a man and pay him compliments with the utmost gravity, whereas, to a woman, I at once lose all self-possession and have never said a pretty thing in my life. My operations on old Speck were so conducted that in a quarter of an hour I had elicited from him an invitation to go over the town with him and see its architectural beauties. So we walked through the huge half-furnished chambers of the palace, we panted up the copper pinnacle of the church tower, we went to see the museum and gymnasium, and coming back into the marketplace again, what could the Hofarchitekt do but offer me a glass of wine and a seat in his house? He introduced me to his Gatton, his Leocadia, the fat woman in blue, as a young world observer, and worthy art friend, a young scion of British Adele, who had come to refresh himself at the Erquilin of his race, and see his brethren of the great family of Hermann. I saw instantly that the old fellow was of a romantic turn, from his rhodomontade to his lady, nor was she a whit less so, nor was Dorothea less sentimental than her mama. She knew everything regarding the literature of Albion, as she was pleased to call it, and asked me news of all the famous writers there. I told her that Miss Edgeworth was one of the loveliest young beauties at our court. I described to her Lady Morgan, herself as beautiful as the wild Irish girl she drew. I promised to give her a signature of Mrs. Heeman's, which I wrote for her that very evening, and described a fox hunt, at which I had seen Thomas More and Samuel Rogers, Esquires, and a boxing match, in which the athletic author of Elam was pitched against the hardy mountain bard, Wordsworth. You see, my education was not neglected, for though I have never read the works of the above-named ladies and gentlemen, yet I knew their names well enough. Time passed away. I, perhaps, was never so brilliant in conversation as when excited by the Osmanshauser and the brilliant eyes of Dorothea that day. She and her parents had dined at their usual heathen hour, but I was, I don't care to own it, so smitten that for the first time in my life I did not even miss the meal, and talked on until 6 o'clock, when tea was served. Madame Speck said they always drank it, and so placing a teaspoonful of bohea in a cauldron of water, she placidly handed out this decoction, which we took with cakes and tartans. I leave you to imagine how disgusted Klingenspor and Schnabel looked when they stepped in as usual that evening to make their party of whist with the Speck family. Down they were obliged to sit, and the lovely Dorothea, for that night, declined to play altogether, and sat on the sofa by me. What we talked about, who shall tell? I would not, for my part, break the secret of one of those delicious conversations, of which I and every man in his time have held so many. You begin, very probably, about the weather. 'Tis a common subject, but what sentiments the genius of love can fling into it. I have often, for my part, said to the girl of my heart for the time being, it's a fine day, or 'tis a rainy morning, in a way that has brought tears to her eyes. Something beats in your heart, and twangle. A corresponding string thrills and echoes in hers. You offer her anything, her knitting needles, a slice of bread and butter, what causes the grateful blush with which she accepts the one or the other? Why, she sees your heart handed over to her upon the needles, and the bread and butter is to her a sandwich with love inside it. If you say to your grandmother, ma'am, it's a fine day, or what not, she would find in the words no other meaning than their outward and visible one. But say so to the girl you love, and she understands a thousand mystic meanings in them. Thus, in a word, though Dorothea and I did not, probably, on the first night of our meeting, talk of anything more than the weather, or trumps, or some subjects which to such listeners as Schnabel and Klingenspur and others might appear quite ordinary, yet to us they had a different signification, of which love alone held the key. Without further ado then, after the occurrences of that evening, I determined on staying at Kalbsbrunn, and presenting my card the next day to the Hofmarschall, requesting to have the honor of being presented to His Highness the Prince, at one of whose court balls my Dorothea appeared as I have described her. It was summer when I first arrived at Kalbsbrunn. The little court was removed to Sigmundslist, His Highness's country seat. No balls were taking place, and, in consequence, I held my own with Dorothea pretty well. I treated her admirer, Lieutenant Klingenspur, with perfect scorn, had a manifest advantage over Major Schnabel, and used somehow to meet the fair one every day, walking in company with her mama in the palace garden, or sitting under the acacias, with Bellet in her mother's lap, and the favorite romance beside her. Dear, dear Dorothea! What a number of novels she must have read in her time! She confesses to me that as he had been in love with Uncas, with St. Priux, with Ivanhoe, and with hosts of German heroes of romance, and when I asked her if she, whose heart was so tender towards imaginary youths, had never had a preference for any one of her living adorers, she only looked, and blushed, and sighed, and said nothing. You see, I had got on as well as man could do, until the confounded court season and the balls began, and then why, then came my usual luck. Waltzing is a part of a German girl's life. With the best will in the world which, I doubt not, she entertains for me, for I never put the matter of marriage directly to her Dorothea, could not go to balls and not waltz. It was madness to me to see her whirling round the room with officers, attaches, prim little chamberlains with gold keys and embroidered coats, her hair floating in the wind, her hand reposing upon the abominable little dancer's epaulette, her good-humored face lighted up with still greater satisfaction. I saw that I must learn to waltz too, and took my measures accordingly. The leader of the ballet at the Kalbsbrunn Theater in my time was Springbach, from Vienna. He had been a regular zephyr once, 'twas said, in his younger days, and though he is now 15 stone weight, I can, heelas, recommend him conscientiously as a master, and I determined to take some lessons from him in the art which I had neglected so foolishly in early life. It may be said, without vanity, that I was an apt pupil, and in the course of half a dozen lessons I had arrived at very considerable agility in the waltzing line, and could twirl round the room with him at such a pace as made the old gentleman pant again, and hardly left him breath enough to puff out a compliment to his pupil. I may say, that in a single week I became an expert waltzer. But as I wished, when I came out publicly in that character, to be quite sure of myself, and as I had hitherto practiced not with a lady, but with a very fat old man, it was agreed that he should bring a lady of his acquaintance to perfect me, and accordingly, at my 8th lesson, Madame Springbach herself came to the dancing room, and the old zephyr performed on the violin. If any man ventures the least sneer with regard to this lady, or dares to insinuate anything disrespectful to her or myself, I say at once that he is an impudent calumniator. Madame Springbach is old enough to be my grandmother, and as ugly a woman as I ever saw. But, though old, she was passionnée pour la danse, and not having on account, doubtless, of her age and unprepossessing appearance, many opportunities of indulging in her favorite pastime, made up for lost time by immense activity, whenever she could get a partner. In vain, at the end of the hour, would Springbach exclaim, "Amelia, my soul's blessing, the time is up. Leon, dear Alfonso," would the old lady exclaim, whisking me round. And though I had not the least pleasure in such a homely partner, yet for the sake of perfecting myself I waltzed and waltzed with her, until we were both half dead with fatigue. At the end of 3 weeks I could waltz as well as any man in Germany. At the end of 4 weeks there was a grand ball at court in honor of H.H. the Prince of Summerland and his princess, and then I determined I would come out in public. I dressed myself with unusual care and splendor. My hair was curled, and my mustache dyed to a nicety, and of the 400 gentlemen present, if the girls of Calvesbrooken did select one who wore an English hussar uniform, why should I disguise the fact? In spite of my silence, the news had somehow got abroad, as news will in such small towns. Herr von Fitzpoodle was coming out in a waltz that evening. His Highness the Duke even made an allusion to the circumstance. When on this eventful night, I went, as usual, and made him my beau in the presentation, Vous, Monsieur, said he, Auskuiets si June, Devis Amor la Dance. I blushed as red as my trousers, and bowing, went away. I stepped up to Dorothea. Heavens! How beautiful she looked! And how archly she smiled as, with a thumping heart, I asked her hand for a waltz. She took out her little mother of pearl dancing book, she wrote down my name with her pencil. We were engaged for the fourth waltz, and till then I left her to other partners. Who says that his first waltz is not a nervous moment? I vow I was more excited than by any duel I ever fought. I would not dance any counter dancer gallop. I repeatedly went to the buffet, and got glasses of punch, dear simple Germany. Tis with rum punch and egg flip thy children strengthen themselves for the dance. I went into the ballroom, and looked the couples bounded before me, the music clashed and rung in my ears, all was fiery, feverish, indistinct. The gleaming white columns, the polished oaken floors in which the innumerable tapers were reflected altogether swam before my eyes, and I was in a pitch of madness, almost when the fourth waltz at length came. "Ill you dance with your sword on?" said the sweetest voice in the world. I blushed, and stammered, and trembled, as I laid down that weapon and my cap, and hark! The music began. Oh, how my hand trembled as I placed it round the waist of Dorothea. With my left hand I took her right. Did she squeeze it? I think she did. To this day I think she did. Away we went. We tripped over the polished oak floor like two young fairies. "Urge, monsieur," said she, with her sweet smile. Then it was Rasbin, monsieur. Then I heard the voices humming and buzzing about. "El dance bean, Langlis." "Afoy, ow," says another. On we went, twirling and twisting, and turning and whirling. Couple after couple dropped panting off. Little Klingenspur himself was obliged to give in. All eyes were upon us, we were going round alone. Dorothea was almost exhausted, when, I have been sitting for 2 hours, since I marked the asterisks, thinking. I have committed crimes in my life, who hasn't? But talk of remorse, what remorse is there like that which rushes up in a flood to my brain sometimes when I am alone, and causes me to blush when I may bed in the dark? I fell, sir, on that infernal slippery floor. Down we came like shot. We rolled over and over in the midst of the ballroom, the music going 10 miles an hour, 800 pairs of eyes fixed upon us, a cursed shriek of laughter bursting out from all sides. Heavens, how clear I heard it, as we went on rolling and rolling. Why? Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.